Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
So are you brining or not brining? I'm not going to hold you to account. This is not a test. You're the master of your own ship. You're the master of the family. Take care of business and love your people. Happy Thanksgiving. Just remember, the Thanksgiving Indians at the time brought pasticho and domades with them to the starving white pilgrims who didn't know how to cook, because there's nothing like a good hearty plate of domades or pasticho on Thanksgiving. It is Thanksgiving. Now, you could be thankful for your political party won, but I think that there's a greater thanks to Almighty God for this country that we have and the freedom that we have, still have. We have to remind ourselves, though, of the people who fought for it, and hope that there are people in this country that still remember how to fight for it. Because this republic is what's worth fighting for, where every man and woman can speak their mind, where the communist Chinese and the Soviets, the Red Soviet menace has not taken over yet, even though it's taken, the left has tried to shut you up countless times, and me countless times. They're not going to succeed because we're Americans. This is Thanksgiving to remind us that we never bend the knee. And something I'm thankful for now is Gene Ives, my friend and former candidate for governor of Illinois, is here with us today. She's with Breakthrough Ideas. She has her own radio show on Sunday evenings on WIND AM 560. And as always, WGN's executive producer, my friend, master of pies, future physics teacher, man of extreme common sense who understands the simplest explanation is often the best, Occam's razor. And for me, John Cass, writer, editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of common sense, and we're always looking for subscriptions. And where are you with the country still roiling, with the Democrats still trying to oppose Trump, trying to protect the border, where Mike Madigan, Boss Madigan, is still on trial, where Jussie Smollett got to break the Chicago way from Kim Fox, and the media did not mention Tina Chen at all. You're on the Chicago Way podcast. Happy Thanksgiving edition on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
Thank you, John.
Well, like I said, Jeannie Ives, the candidate for governor who should have become governor, is our guest. Conservative, forthright, military, mom, and wife, and just a all-around good person who has the country's interests at heart. Jeannie Ives is our guest on the Chicago Way. Good morning or afternoon or evening, Jeannie.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, John. What a pleasure, and really what an honor.
Now let's go over all the things you're doing. You're hosting your podcast. Tell us about that.
So I moved to the radio show. So I'm on AM 560 Sunday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. And, it's really hard to do a podcast unless you're a really well-recognized name. like John Cass.
Oh, yeah.
You get a lot of followers. But for me, the radio show has really given me the ability to attract some top level guests who want to talk about national issues in Chicago. So it's been really great. I love that. But then the radio show becomes a podcast, commercial free, afterwards. So it really does kill two birds with one stone.
Sure.
Where do we find it?
You can get it as a podcast on the AM 560 listing, or you can go to anywhere else you would find a podcast, like Spotify or Apple Podcasts.
And what are people searching for there? I mean, they can obviously search for you, but what do they want to search for, the title?
So you want to search for The Real Story with Jeannie Ives.
There you go.
Okay. I thought it was Breakthrough Ideas. No? Okay. Well, The Real Story.
The Real Story with Jeannie Ives is what I have called my radio show.
Right.
And it is part of what I do with Breakthrough Ideas. And at Breakthrough Ideas, we try to connect the dots for voters so that they're more informed when they go to the polling place.
It's interesting. Well, Jeannie, this is one of, kind of a growing trend, I think, in politics, especially grassroots politics, idea of people like, hey, you know, you may not know where to turn, media you don't trust, who do you trust in the media, but you know who I am, and I'm living down the street from you, so here's what I think you should be, information you should be researching and looking at and having, so you're, you know, an informed voter. And that trend is like that grassroots mentality is kind of, I feel, popped up on both, on all sides of the spectrum here in politics, but really grassroots and being like, hey, I want information I trust. Is that, was that the kind of the impetus for this? Is that kind of what you're targeting?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I just found out that, I mean, after I lost to Sean Cast in the 2020 congressional race, I figured that people really didn't like his policies. They just didn't know what they didn't know about his policies. And I felt like we needed to talk more directly to voters about how they're getting scammed by government that they finance. So that's why we started Breakthrough Ideas, is try to bring issues to light that people didn't know about. So it's kind of funny. I mean, I simply took something that Stephen Moore had said in his Unleash Prosperity email. And all I did was take the portion that said that Illinois has not had no net new jobs since 2020. 5 years, no net new jobs. And I took that and I simply put it on Facebook. And I've gotten hundreds of shares of just that simple data point. And I think that's how simplified we have to get with people. Like, you can't have Pritzker out there lying about his job creation, lying about the economy in the state of Illinois, which is in the tank. We have the second highest unemployment rate in the entire country. And so you have to really distill it down to voters and make it as simple for them to understand, because they're saturated with obligations. They're saturated with media. They don't know who to trust. But here's a simple factoid for you.
Well, one thing Jeannie Ives can't trust is the media in Chicago, particularly the Chicago Tribune. I'm just calling out Rick Pearson here as the combine cheerleader, or the Sun-Times. I really don't know who reads it. So where do you go? Where do people go who want to get info?
Well, I mean, I think they go to your site, John. You've got a lot of good insight, but that's the beauty of the alternate media. You can bring out simple information for folks, and they can grab it anywhere. I think a lot of people are getting their information on Twitter, and they're getting direct reports. You can go to places like CWB Chicago. You can get your crime update, right? These are real folks in the arena, just simply reporting about what's going on. We've got a lot of avenues to get information out now.
All right. So let's get to the podcast that we're doing. I've got a few questions, and I want to acknowledge my wife, Betty. You had lunch with us a few weeks ago or months ago, and she's like, call Jeannie Ives. So
you married up, John. She's a gem. She's a gem.
Amen.
I hope she'll keep me. So you were in court. In federal court, looking at Madigan, right? Was that the trial you were attending?
Yes. So, you know, we were waiting and waiting for the Madigan trial to happen. It was kind of supposed to start last April, got delayed. I thought, wow, it would have been great to have a sentencing right when the DNC was in town in August. Of course, that didn't happen. Finally, the trial gets started in October. And I know it's going to be a lengthy trial. I say to myself, look, I actually just want to go down for one day and watch what's going on and hear the discussion. Because much of what they're talking about in terms of the bribery the alleged bribery case that they have against him, happened during the time that I was in office and I watched him. So I thought, I just want to go down there. And I was a little bit wondering, what to expect. I had my media badge in case I needed to get in the courtroom because it was full. I prepared ahead of time, knew where I was going, all of that. And I get into the courtroom and essentially there's, I would say there's probably about 10 reporters on one side. And there, when I walked in, there's maybe 10 supporters on the other side of the courtroom. The courtroom was set up really oddly. I don't know if you've been there yet, John. I do suggest you go, but it's really odd. You've got the jury off to the left side. The judge, of course, is at front. And then you've got vertical rows where you've got first the prosecutor's desk facing the jury. Behind them is Madigan's desk with his team of lawyers facing the jury. And behind him is McClain. And it's just an odd setup. It's not like you typically see maybe on TV or something. Or in even other courtrooms. But, you know, his lawyers are all there, you know, dressed spiffy, ready to go. And then Madigan walks in, takes his seat at the front, is very engaged, watches the jury intently. And at one
How is he dressed? Yeah. I got to get this because we always, John, he always looks very clean and like put together.
Absolutely. And he looked just like he did as the speaker, suit, tie. Okay,
he's not playing the woe is me card, right? You know,
no, not at all.
Like the altar boy who's just had a bath. Yeah,
there it is. That's it.
Yeah, no, and also very calm as a cucumber. No smirking, no, you know, side laugh. Like you'd often see him smirking in the back of the behind the podium. He'd be even doing this when you would have Governor Rauner speaking his budget address or even some dignitary. He's behind them, literally not paying attention, looking around, smirking once in a while, talking with Mapes. This time, completely different. I mean, just playing the part. And he certainly knew what he needed to look like in front of the jury because the jury's looking right at him the whole time. And, you know, he's writing notes once in a while, conferring with his lawyers about something. When they have sidebar discussions with the judge, they all put on their headphones and he's always got his headphones on listening in. At one point during the morning, Lisa Madigan walks in, sits right in the front row and stays for the entire rest of the day. I stayed until that day was over at about 2:45. So it was interesting. And I just, my problem with the whole thing is that everything that Madigan did, in my opinion, is still happening now.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So in other words, let's throw the old man in prison, but you're not going to improve Illinois that way. Will you?
No, not one bit.
Right.
And the other concerning thing is, of course, he's in federal court.
Yeah.
Right. He's not in state court. Because nobody's going to indict Mike Madigan in state court. It takes the federal prosecutors to come in and clean up any ounce of corruption that we have. So I think he'll get convicted. I think that there's an appetite for that. I think people want to. But again, and by the way, ComEd pays a $200 million fine because they know it's bribery. In their head, it's bribery. And then four other folks get convicted of the same scheme that Madigan was involved in. And he wants to say, No, my hands were off of this. I'm clean. Oh my gosh. Anybody who spent any time in the state legislature knows that Madigan was all powerful all the time. Every decision, every single bill went through his lens first before it was decided on. Every single one of them.
What was McClain? Now, McClain is the longtime friend, the consul, the consigliere. He's on trial with Madigan, and he created some nonsense on an email where he sent it out to donors saying, we are the favored few, or we're the close guys to Madigan, or what did he say? Apparently, I can't remember now exactly, but it was fairly damning, okay? And I could just imagine when Madigan heard that he turned white as a sheet, even though he's already white as a sheet. And
Well, yeah.
Go on, Jeannie.
No, I was going to say, you know, So some of the big bills that they were talking about, the AT&T bill, the ComEd bill, they always had a sunset on that legislation. It always had to come back up for renewal about every 2 years. And every single lobbyist down there knew that that was because Madigan could extract campaign cash to get their legislation passed or extended. It was just a known fact. Everybody knew that. I don't even know why this is part of what's on trial. I mean, you could talk to any single one of us members, and we all knew the game that was being played there.
Well, that's it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, that's it. That's why I want to express on that. And John, you're looking for the line was the most trusted of the trusted in supposed Excel sheet that the listing of who's the who's of the who's who. But that's the thing is that like you're talking about. But gee, lay it out for people who don't really understand the process, or it may be completely dull to Illinois politics, but the system was essentially built by Madigan 40 years ago to do everything they've been doing. And now all of a sudden the feds are like, well, wait a minute, this whole thing's messed up and illegal. Somebody's got to take the crown for this. And he's going to be the guy, but it's not going to change the system because the system was built by them 40 years ago.
That's right. And the system is still in place.
And it's legal.
If you want to indict Madigan, then why aren't you indicting Harmon and Welch?
Right.
Look, they want to say that Madigan gave jobs here, he did that there. I'm telling you, there's horse trading all day long down there just for campaign cash. Pass this bill, you'll get, and we'll fund your folks. But people don't think that that's still happening. Of course that's happening. Now, maybe the jobs thing is a little bit more behind the scenes, and they were definitely after Madigan for a purpose. Yeah, everything went through Madigan. That's the bottom line here. And everybody knew that. He controlled every piece of legislation. My first bill that I filed, of course, I filed right to work. People went nuts down there. I mean, nobody had filed right to work legislation, I think, in 20 years. So I filed it and I got in trouble right away. Big deal. I don't care. But another bill I filed was transparency on union contracts.
Even teachers?
Yeah, all of it. Like you had to actually show the contract before you voted on it to the public, and they got a 2-week hearing period and all that. And because right now all these contracts are signed behind closed doors, and then they're just approved at the last minute and the public can't weigh in. So I had a transparency bill. It was in Jack Franks's state government committee. And I went over to Jack and said, hey, I'd like to present my bill in committee. He said, well, I was told to kill your bill, but because I like you, I'll let you at least have a hearing. I was a brand new legislator, probably a month in. I knew exactly where that directive came from.
It's just Illinois, right? It's not broken, it's fixed. Like you said, money, the Democrats held the biggest purse strings for Democratic cash to go out and to fund candidates. And Madigan controlled that via being the top dog in the party. So anytime anything that happened, it had to go through him no matter what, because they had the stranglehold on pretty much most of the politics. But there's also this stuff where they changed the rules about, the way we tax people's property and the way that you make money off of an assessment and changing. And his company makes so much money off of getting around these tax loopholes. I mean, it's so part of the system. It's so ingrained and technically legal, but it makes no sense as far as an ethical standpoint. Where do we go to make this, where do we take this whole thing apart? Like, how do we start? I mean, taking Madigan, like you said, isn't going to do anything because he's already had his day in the sun. He's already milked the trough for everything he could. And he's sunsetting himself, essentially.
Yes. I mean, you still have a corrupt property tax system. You still have people paying lawyers to get their assessment down and sharing that cash with the lawyers. They get a third, you save two thirds. And then the next year your assessment goes back up and you play the same game again.
Right.
And so that's how Madigan made his money. In 2014, I put out a study with my buddy, Warren Dixon, who is the best assessor in the state of Illinois, or was at that time. He's now moved to Tennessee, smart man. He did the study, like the top 12 sales in Chicago, 7 of the top 12 buildings were represented by Madigan's law firm, and they were at 42% of the value when they went to sale.
Jeez.
So the underassessment, when you do that on billion-dollar projects, like at that time, the Sears Tower, what do they call it now? I forgot the name now. Willis Tower, whatever. They change it all the time. The Sears Tower was, at 42% of its value when it was sold.
Funny how that happens.
And I mean, so he should be indicted for a lot of other things. You know, he also was there in 71 when they did the Constitutional Convention and created that pension protection clause.
Well, it sounds like the state of Illinois is not in a good state, right? And that's why I left. I mean, I couldn't take it anymore, but I didn't want to pay for it anymore. There was another thing that came up this week, besides you going to court, which is always a great thing.
You know, while I was at court, John, at one point, Madigan caught my eye. He really? Was looking at me. Yes, he stared at me for like solidly just for 10 seconds, just glared at me. It was the weirdest thing.
He must have felt like I did when Hanhart was staring at me before he went away for the mob jewelry thefts. Lifted a styrofoam cup of water and then saluted. And I thought, okay, I'm a dead man. You're going to come and hit me. All right. So anyway, the other thing, speaking of going to prison, Jeannie, didn't you suggest that someone else should go to prison in the Jesse Smollett fiasco? Yes. I think it was that you want Kim Fox to go and pay a $130,000 fine. Yes?
Yes, of course. I mean, that was his final sentence after the special prosecutor, Dan Webb, got involved and they retried the case after she cut that deal, which I do find it's interesting how that all went down. But hey, you know what? Maybe she should serve the time instead and pay the $130,000 restitution because she's the one who screwed up the case. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I also think the editor of the Chicago Tribune should go and just keep her company, because I think in my reading of it, the Trib did not address its own story that it broke years ago, which is that Kim Fox was in secret communications with
right
Michelle Obama's chief of staff, Tina Chen, to spring this guy out. And I don't know why doesn't the media attend to it? Maybe it's because they love Obama so much. Why don't we hear about it? I mean, to me, that's outrageous.
Well, your former paper, the Chicago Tribune, should be, you know, indicted for just, I don't know, malfeasance, honestly. Terrible reporting. They also came out with an article that essentially said, oh, hey, guess what? I guess we are going to have an energy crisis in the state of Illinois. I guess, and I guess it is the fault of CEJA that was passed, which we approved of. We thought it was a great idea. And it's like, I wrote about that too. It's like, you numbskulls, if you were listening to the other side and they never, ever picked up our comments from myself and other conservative Republicans down there who literally did an energy tour
right
ahead of this vote. And they just ignored all of that. And then they want to come out and say, you know what? Maybe the skeptics were a little bit right about us having a problem with energy.
Right. Jeannie, explain that. Yeah. Explain what happened there, because people may not pick this up. And this is something that I have friends who worked in nuclear energy in Illinois, and they bailed, you know, seeing this coming because it was a death knell for it. But explain what you're talking about here, because everybody might not pick up what you're talking about.
Okay, sure. So first of all, energy is really, really important. And we used to be a massive energy producer and exporter of energy in the state of Illinois because we have the largest nuclear fleet in the United States. And part of what you're seeing in the Madigan trial is, of course, the ComEd Exelon deal that was done in December 1st of 2016. That is what a lot of this corruption trial is about, because energy is that important. And Exelon wanted a bailout. And they got it. They got $2.4 billion over 10 years to keep the nuclear plants open. Well, of course, that wasn't enough. So they came back again and said, now we have two more nuclear plants that need some support as well. And the reason they need some support is because you've got wind and solar energy that is heavily subsidized on the federal level, that is coming in and literally producing energy for a fraction of the cost that it would cost a coal plant or even nuclear to produce at. And they're undercutting the market for them when the energy is bought and then sent up to the electric grid. I think energy policy is very complicated, so I'm just simplifying this as best I can. But the bottom line is they couldn't make money on it. So in comes CEJA to save, again, the nuclear plants. But as part of that deal, of course, everybody has to have their job carve out. You've got to have your minority job carve out more specifically. The work has to be done by the unions. You have to do additional subsidies for wind and solar. You're putting in requirements that coal shuts down, which is what they did. They said, we're going to shut down coal plants. They saw the writing on the wall. We're going to shut down natural gas by 2045. They have all these requirements that to create this renewable energy system that is completely built on false. It's, you can't even do it. It's going to fall by its own weight because it's unrealistic.
We've seen it.
Yeah, I mean, they literally, you know, literally in there, like, our goal is to have 100% renewable energy.
Right,
or
that's
clean
the thing.
Energy by 2050. Impossible. Exactly,
and that's the thing is that was driving me insane about it. It's like, I get it. Okay, we're progressing as a culture. We're moving away from coal. Okay, fine. But the idea was that, well, coal and nuclear have to go by this time, and everything forward has to be green. And everyone say, well, wait a minute. That doesn't make any sense. The only reason it's viable now is, like you're explaining, is being subsidized. I mean, nuclear energy should be our bread and butter in this country because we can do it. We had a couple of issues with some bad companies, but the technology has moved way beyond that. And it's crazy how much we can do for ourselves. But they set us in stone in the future to be, nope. Not doing that. We're going green energy, quote unquote, green energy anyway, even though nuclear energy is 100,000 times more green if you think about it. But anyway, I digress.
It is. And I would actually argue natural gas is even greener than coal, than solar and wind for sure. When you take it, all the production, the you know, digging up the rare earth minerals, the mining of it, the cleaning of it, the processing of it, everything. You're using fossil fuels just to do all of that. So it's a total joke that those are actual clean energy systems to begin with. So, but anyway, they come with all this thing. It sounds good. The environmentalists like it. Everybody wants it. Right. Oh, we're going to have a million EV cars in the state of Illinois by 2030. That's Pritzker's goal. We're at like 115,000, maybe. It's a joke. Right. It's not going to happen. But they're forcing you to pay for all of this. So we've probably spent at least $50 million now to build EV charging stations across the state of Illinois. You're building essentially the gas stations for EV vehicle owners. And oh, by the way, if you want to fill up your car with electricity at a state park, you get to do that for free. So we're also paying for the energy. I mean, this whole thing is a joke. And finally, the Tribune writes, well, you know what? I guess we are running out of energy. Yeah, no kidding. Like, no kidding. And you guys, they could have taken people to task. They could have been part of the conversation. They never are. The media is such a failure in this state.
Well, Kristen McQuarrie is no longer at the Tribune to run the editorial page. She's no longer my boss. I'm no longer there. I don't know who's there. I don't read it. I mean, I think about some of the people that I left behind, like Jason Meisner, who I think is a good reporter. But really, the disservice done to the people of Illinois because of ideology is amazing. It's like the disservice done to the people of America when ideology consumes the Defense Department, which is my next topic for Jeannie Ives.
Okay.
What should we look forward to with Pete Hegseth as Secretary of Defense, and what is the whole DEI thing? Now, you were a young woman who went through West Point. You're an officer in the U.S. military long before anybody started talking about DEI. And my wife, Betty, had a question. How was it for you? How did you even proceed in that environment?
Well, I also grew up under Title IX. So I was used to, you know, participating in sports. It wasn't a big deal. I'm one of six children, four brothers, you know, so I grew up around guys. I wasn't intimidated by it. And I actually didn't do the math and realize that I was in the eighth class to graduate women from West Point. I didn't even know it was that new. I didn't even pay attention to that. I just thought, oh, it's another you know, it is a military academy. I was very much aware of that. I just didn't realize how new women were to that until I got there. And then it became a little bit more obvious. There was still a lot of sexism, whatever. But, you know, you're going through it with other guys, honestly, who they grew up with sisters and, you know, high school sports with women and all that. It wasn't that unusual. I don't know. It wasn't too bad. There were occasions where you felt the sexism, but those were actually more from professors, I would say, than from my classmates. So,
So where are we now?
Well, it's
what
great.
Is going
I mean,
on now?
Well, they've gone overboard. They've gone overboard. It's celebrate the women rather than just make them one of the same. It's push them into all the highest cadet positions you possibly can. If I'm not mistaken, of the last 8 first captains, which is the highest cadet rank you can get as a senior, I think 6 of the last 8 or 5 of the last 8 are women or minorities. I mean, that is right. Out of the ordinary.
Way above the norm. And you're right. Pushing, mm-hmm. trying to make up time or whatever, which isn't a thing. I mean, it's such a, like, oh, I'll make up for that, you know, not having women. Let's have all the, it should
be. I don't think communist China worries about pronouns or people's feelings or anything like that, do they, Jean?
No, they don't. You know, and so it is exciting to have somebody like Pete Hegseth, who potentially will be in charge of the Defense Department because he gets the whole DEI, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion. You know, and it's bad at. They actually have a diversity minor at West Point. I'm part of a group called the MacArthur Society. We want to get rid of a lot of the DEI that we see. At West Point, they have a diversity conference. They have canceled it because we have put so much heat on them. They have canceled it for this year. We don't know if it's coming back. They have way too many civilian professors there, in our opinion. They have diminished the honor code as well. That needs to be reformed. They need to get back to war fighting skills and making that the focus. I would say there's some things that are better than when I was a cadet. But in many cases, some of the officership programs need to be revamped and relooked at.
And basically, in my mind, and I never served, but in my mind, the people we task for war fighting are the ones who join to serve their country and risk their lives for their country. And I don't think they're being well treated by the military or by the United States, the politicians in Washington, at all. I think that when they die, Victor Davis Hanson has a comment that he usually often makes about the number of the percentage of, say, the, like, they pick white recruits, you know, white recruits, mm-hmm. okay, and they die in combat, they die in numbers far exceeding the population, the percentage. And I don't think that figures in to the discussion at all publicly, at least when thoroughly modern Millie is flouncing around talking about white fragility and white rage. I don't think they really discuss that at all.
There's definitely an overemphasis on race and sex. And yes. that's not just in admissions, that's everywhere else in the military. And you have to have a meritocracy in all aspects of this.
That's
and,
it. Yeah.
And, you know, you're dealing with people's, you're dealing with life and death at any point. And, right. you know, on the combat thing, let's face it, women are in combat. Does everybody remember Jessica Lynch? She was the first soldier that was captured during the Iraqi war invasion. And she was just a transportation driver. Mm-hmm. She was on a supply line. She got captured. So the idea that women aren't in combat, yes, they are in combat. Should they be in the combat units where their whole mission is war fighting, like ground pounder, carrying, you know, 80 pounds of gear and going out for days at a time to search for and destroy the enemy? Is that the best use for them? I don't know that that is a sustainable event for the women, quite frankly, just because physically they're not made that way. Certainly there's some women that are definitely tougher than some guys.
True.
Absolutely. Yes. That is true. That is absolutely true. Yeah, I just don't know if that's the best use for them. So I'm not saying yes or no on that. My right. son's opinion are, hey, if they can meet the standards 100% the way that sure. we can meet the standards, fine. If not, no.
Now, you have family members in West Point or through the academies, yes or no?
So my husband graduated from West Point. My son, Nick, graduated from West Point. He is now a Navy aviator, though. He switched over to the Navy upon graduation. And then my other son, Joe, just graduated from West Point, and he's going to be an Army doctor. He's in med school right now.
So what's the Thanksgiving holiday like?
That's what I'm thinking. What's the Ives family Thanksgiving look like?
Well, it's kind of nice when your kids start to take over Thanksgiving plans, sure. and that's what happened. So my Navy guy's got two young kids. He's like, he didn't want to travel all the way to Chicago with them. So he found a Airbnb place in West Virginia. And then my other son, who actually he was ROTC infantry guy, got a Ranger tab. And he moved up to Alaska just in August. And they couldn't stand it. They couldn't stand to be away when the whole family was going to be at Thanksgiving. So they're flying in from Alaska. So I really am very thankful that they want to be together and that they're willing to make the effort to be together for Thanksgiving, even though they have their own families. So that's awesome. I can't wait.
Very cool. You're heading to West Virginia then for turkey?
Yes,
and,
yes.
Excellent.
Yep.
Brining or not brining?
not brining. No. Sorry, I mean, we're going to be, you know, it's I'm not going to have all my stuff with me, right?
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, so, but it's still getting
it'll be modified.
I love it. Jeannie, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the future of the Republican Party in Illinois and just politics local here. And I'm moving forward, looking forward. So put your soothsayer's hat on. It's for Republicans, it's promising, right? You know, the presidential election picked up, what, 4 points, 4.5 points swing in the population. That's a trend, sure, that has certainly been moving the needle. What do you think needs to happen? You become, you know, king of Illinois Republicans and you can do what you wish. What's got to happen?
We need to plow the fields in, I would say, city of Chicago and parts of suburban Cook that have been decimated the most by Democrat policies. You've got the entire South suburban Cook that had, you know, double digit percentage increases in property taxes. Yeah. And yet they didn't make a change in who represents them in the state legislature because Republicans didn't go out there and actually just run on that and run on all the scams that are being perpetrated against you, them. So we've let the Democrats essentially, we've ceded the territory by not fighting hard enough. And I know for a fact, in my opinion, there was malfeasance in some of the campaigns that were run just in the fall because they did not want to hit the Democrats hard. They wanted to appear to be the nice candidate. No, I mean, it's not negative to expose your candidate, your opponent's record when they have destroyed the morality in the state, when they, you know, when you've got people like Ann Stava Murray in suburban Naperville running a bill saying that we're going to classify you as an abusive parent if you refuse to let your minor child transition. I mean, she shouldn't even be in office. She should not be in office, and they wouldn't hit her hard on that. So it takes a lot of effort to connect with the voters and connect and let them know what's going on. But you have to do it every single cycle. And we just don't have enough money to do it. But we need to figure out how to win because their record's terrible. Their record, they have destroyed the state of Illinois.
You know, the hope there is like, okay, well, this looks kind of promising. I mean, it does show that Trump, less people overall voted for Trump, you know, this time around because it was just less people voted, oddly enough. But the percentage is higher. And so you feel like, you know, so goes DC, so goes the nation. I know Illinois is kind of a unique piece in that. But that's the conversation that everybody who I know who are like liberals are always talk about. Well, yeah, you know, we're this little blue enclave in Chicago and then it's everybody else is red. And there are some pockets of blue here and there. But how do you grow that? I mean, how do you show that the state is, you know, there are a lot of people who feel one way, but they're not getting an equal voice.
Well, the media is not giving them an equal voice, that's for sure.
Yes.
But also you have to have legislators down there that are relentless about bringing these issues up and bringing them up with specifics behind them, data and information. And we don't have leaders in the House or the Senate, in my opinion, that do that sufficiently. They do not capture that audience, and then the media doesn't pick up on it. But also media doesn't want to pick up on it. The media is in on the game, the mainstream media. And so you've got to go out there and you've got to, you need people that are just, I don't know. I've had a lot of Democrats approach me this election cycle and say they're fed up and how can you help us get the message out? So I look forward to working with them in the future to actually just have individual meetings with their constituencies and tell them exactly what's happening. But we have to field a team, right? You have to field a candidate. You have to actually have a campaign. You have to have money behind that to make this work. The Democrats spent, millions of dollars. They would spend over $1 million for a brand new person running for state rep. And they almost took out a few of our people.
Yeah. In Chicago.
They lost the school board elections. Juan Rangel and Vallis fought that off. And the union showed weakness in that election. But to Jeannie's point about the transgender thing, I'm just looking at a headline now. California judge strips father of parental rights, green lights ex-wife to proceed with chemical and surgical castration of their 12-year-old son. Excuse me.
That story is so weeded too, because it's not even just California law. There's some interesting pieces of Texas law that go into that story. Maternal rights over an embryo that's not even yours. That's a weeded story. But you're right, John. I mean, that's the stuff that, you know, Illinois. You're like, what did that? If I read that story's headline 20 years ago, I think it was a farce.
Well, Jeff and Gene, didn't Pritzker, Fat Boy, Governor Fat Boy, announce that not including pot and abortion, that we'd also be doing more gender care, affirming care, surgery. Yeah. Illinois would be the leader in the state of the states in that.
So I'm really anxious for Trump to get in there, because it's through Donald Trump and his administration that we're going to at least get some things set right in the state of Illinois. And so that includes deportation of illegal immigrants. That includes getting rid of transgender minor procedures on minors. And he's going to do that with the power of the federal purse, because Illinois is, obviously not doing well on its budget, projected budget deficits of $23 billion over the next 5 years. Pritzker's GOMB, Office of Management and Budget, come out and essentially say, hey, you need to find cuts any way you can. And CapFax, which I don't read much, they had a really good synopsis of what's going on. But GOMB is telling all these agencies, you need to find cuts right now.
Yeah.
So if you're now going to lose federal dollars, whether it's for transportation, things, schools, if he says no Medicaid or Medicare payments to hospitals that perform transgender care on minors, it's Trump's administration that's going to help right the ship in the state of Illinois, especially on deportation of illegals.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Tom Holman as the hard sheriff grabbing people and throw them over the fence. After what happened to Lakin Riley and all these other women who have been attacked, I can't consciously support the idea of everyone having a Rottweiler. I don't think people are, most people are adept at training protection dogs so that they don't kill a child. And I don't know about giving people handguns to defend, because the culture never is goes trying. Well. I'm sorry?
So that never goes well. Oh, the stories about the person who winds up shooting themselves or a friend.
People have the right to defend themselves.
Oh, of course.
But we talk about our daughters like we tried to instill in them kindness and compassion culturally, and that might stand in the way of action like defending themselves by pulling the trigger when they have to. And all that is and all that came through when I saw the judge's deliberations and sentencing of Jose Ibarra. I don't know. How are you guys left with it?
You know, I think that unfortunately you have to kind of be on guard whenever you're in a situation where something like that could happen. Although this college kid just goes out, Lincoln Riley just goes out for a jog, the place where she's always been. Who's expecting that this to happen? It's unfortunate, though, that, you know, a lot of these leftist suburban women that are insulated from all these bad actions don't understand how dangerous the real world is. And instead voted for somebody like, you know, Kamala Harris.
Or Marie Newman. That's why they drove me out of Western Springs. I couldn't stand drawing another breath in Western Springs, paying those high property taxes, and all the wokeness and the hate has no home here signs with a creature like Marie Newman in the Congress from that district.
John, it's true of all of them, though. Every single one of those Democrat congressionals and Dick Durbin and Duckworth, all of them are as far left as you can get.
Right.
Well, it's I just joke. So it's the left Olympics, or it's like the progressive Olympics. You know, everybody has to have the shiniest progressive, you know, whatever it is to get votes and get money and stuff and get media coverage. And that's the problem. We got to figure out how do you change it to be like, well, yes, but, you know, society can move forward, but it's got to move forward at the right pace, or otherwise you sow distrust and anger and, you know, all the hatred that's going around between people on both sides of the paradigm.
We have a lot of cowards in the state. That's how I see it. Okay. We have a lot of cowards in the business industry area who should be speaking up and saying, wait a minute, you gave $1.3 billion in tax subsidies between Goshen, a Chinese communist backed company that uses slave labor, and Rivian, who's never ever turned a profit on a single vehicle that's come off its line. You give them collectively $1.3 billion in tax subsidies, and you expect my business to pick up the bill for that. And you've got lots of people who could weigh in and push Pritzker around on this and push their local state senator and their state representative around on this, and they don't do it. It's the same thing with parents. All these parents, they could be pushing their school districts around about poor test scores, about transgender policies in the schools, you know, about woke curriculum. They could be doing the same. They don't do it. People lack courage. And that's the most, I guess, disgusting thing, in my opinion, as an American. Because do they not understand that but for the courageous people who created America, who fought for America, in the Civil War, World War I, World War II, you name it, but for their courage, they wouldn't even not have the privileges that they have. And they just are cowards. And I have no explanation for that.
Well, don't look for heroics in the Chicago media, because you won't find it there. No one will. That speaking of cowards, that is the nature of corporate media today. They're all cowards.
They could turn it, the state, around on a dime if they spoke up and got involved.
Agreed, 100%. Well, Gene, I hope you have a great holiday. Merry Christmas and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for talking.
Thanks a lot, John. Thanks for having me on. We'll have to meet up at Farina's in Michigan City. I was just there. Oh, it was great. It's fantastic. Get some really great Italian food.
Get him up there.
What was that?
We'll have to get him up there.
Yes, absolutely.
For Gene Ives, you can listen to her on radio on Sunday evenings at AM 560, my favorite radio station. And you can find her writings at
Breakthrough-ideas.com.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Gene. And for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, my second favorite radio station. And for me, John Cass, editor of johncastnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. Thanks for joining us, everyone. Join us again next time on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus, and happy Thanksgiving.